And good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink.
I'm alive.
And our guest today is the Honorable, as we learned from Angela just being on the previous show, the Honorable Philip Kingston, who is the new city council person from District 14. I do want to point out that he started his term of office perfectly. The results came in. I was at the election party. He said, "So when am I going to get to be on your show?" I said, "Next Saturday." He said, "Okay, see you there."
Glad
to
be here.
That's the proper way to kick it off, yeah.
It is.
Well, and then I sang Prince.
Yeah, you did.
Wow.
You missed a good party.
I did, obviously.
I have been told by objective observers, whom I did not pay to run my campaign, that it was the best victory party ever on any level of government.
The alcohol was paid for by the police and firefighters.
Oh, my.
It was perfect.
Those are good endorsements to get.
It is. So, we have a new council. Philip is our new council person. Can I get gay married in Oaklawn yet?
I'll perform the ceremony.
Thank
and
you.
It'll have just as much, it'll be worth every cent you pay for.
Do I have employment non-discrimination in Texas yet?
Working on it.
Okay, how about Museum Tower? You haven't negotiated a settlement between the fabulous legacy that Ray Nasher left us and those criminals who put up that eyesore and is destroying that place.
Hey, now, those criminals are trying to
That's
help
right. They bought my beer and
firefighters retire. let's be a little moderated in our speech.
And we're going to get to some of these things. Are you still planning to build a toll road in the Trinity?
I am not planning to.
I crossed the river today. There was still water. I expect that, you know, those levees, you need to just push them in, cover up all that water, let's get rid of it, and pave the damn thing already. And I know your predecessor is all for that. Are we going to do some fracking? You know, if we do any oil drilling in the parks, and I've talked to Angela about this, the park that I can guarantee you there's oil under it, actually it's refined gasoline, we need to be drilling in the Clyde Warren Park. It's
yes,
in your district.
Yes, absolutely.
It's refined gasoline. You're absolutely right.
Directly
absolutely.
Under there is gas.
Actually, there's clean energy, too, because there's an electrical conduit that we might hit.
Hmm. Right. That's a brilliant idea.
Why aren't we doing this?
I don't know
this.
Why you're not on the city council.
I've been asked to run, and I keep saying, what are you, nuts? Because you know me. I'll bring these ideas to the city council if I were on the council. You know I would. Anyway, and Angela finally got Lemon Avenue paved last year.
And then it got cut up immediately.
And just last week, they were cutting it up. And when they finished the work, it is so bumpy. Why haven't you fixed it yet?
So I'm 48 hours ahead of getting inaugurated. I haven't even started the job yet.
And what have you gotten done?
Groundbreaking on the Katy Trail extension. I have an answer from Encore about Lemon Avenue. Those are temporary patches. They're making sure it's not Encore, it's Atmos. They're making sure that they've got the leaks fixed and they're going to come back and smooth out the street. And that's what they always say, so don't. I'm already hearing the
smart ass.
You all on the radio.
I have these smart ass questions. He has answers.
You all on the radio can't see David sneering at my responses.
Actually, they can if they want to go to the video that we're going to post.
Jaded cynicism.
But yes, I'm already fielding street smoothness complaints.
Street smoothness complaints. The councilman in charge of street smoothness complaints.
Well, I sort of am. I actually am the immediate past representative on the bond steering committee for District 14. Mm. So streets and drainage, that actually is a big part of what I want to do.
Let's just talk a little bit about that bond package then. One of the things that Angela did, the way they took the bond package was we voted in a certain dollar amount, and each council person got 1/14 of it, basically.
More or less. Based on a formula.
Yeah. But you know, they got their section.
That's assuming that all 14 districts have roads and streets. That's a big assumption, but...
Yeah, up north, I don't know if they do. I never go north of Mockingbird, so... Angela took a good chunk of her... money from her portion and is putting it in Cedar Springs. It's not decided what the money is going to go to exactly yet. Have you been thinking a little bit about that?
Well, actually, the Cedar Springs piece is for improvements of the roadway and the pedestrian and bike accommodations. Mm-hmm. So that stuff, everyone complains that bond package money seems to not wind up where it was advertised. I'm a big believer that if the voters saw a group of projects and voted yes, then those projects really ought to get done, absent some sort of intervening emergency or...
Well, so we voted for a park in the Trinity, and we're getting a parkway.
Not yet. Hide and watch.
Okay, good. No, but let's go to Cedar Springs. We can talk about paving the Trinity afterwards. So what types of things are you envisioning? I mean, I know it's for street improvements, for sidewalk improvements, but it was really nothing specific, because there have been ideas that have been floated to make Cedar Springs just one lane in each direction for about five blocks. There have been ideas to widen sidewalks to take away some parking, but that makes it more difficult, or add parking, which is what you do with the lanes.
I think, you know, we see Henderson, Greenville, Cedar Springs, the three major sort of entertainment thoroughfares where District 14 and District 2 kind of overlap. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of conversations with Adam Medrano about the future of those places. And I have a lot of experience living off of Lower Greenville myself, and how you do this in a way that makes people happy. Because it's, you know, as we get more people there, as we get more development there, you have little frictions that develop. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody's interests can be aligned all the time. Right. So for Cedar Springs, I think what you see is a really vibrant street. It's the rents are going up, and there's good and bad with that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's small independent businesses have to be careful about their overhead, for sure. Mm-hmm. And then you back right up to, you know, people's bedrooms. Mm-hmm. So you really need to take care with what you put there. But I think that the improvements that you see there now, with the crosswalks particularly, mm-hmm. and the amount that the traffic has slowed in that section of Cedar Springs, just north or west, whatever you want to call it, of Oakland.
It's cockeyed, so it's...
I mean, that to me looks great. I think it's improved the street quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I think it could be a template for some of our other similar entertainment mm-hmm. district streets.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when the first lights went in right there where Sue Ellen's used to be on Cedar Springs, going across there, and we were with Valletta Lil when she could have, like, virtually cracked the champagne bottle to inaugurate its beginning. And people were saying, oh, it's not going to do any good. It's right here in the middle of the street. People won't respect it. They'll just drive right through. And it did take some time, but I think that time has really come full circle, and folks are really, I mean, you can drive down Cedar Springs now.
I hope some people remember two people were killed there.
Yes.
So slow down.
Yeah. But I think people are. I just think it took a long time for people to register and imprint in their brains that when they drive that street, there's a slowdown right there, as well there should be.
Isn't it amazing that people can learn things?
Isn't it amazing?
any ideas yet? And I know you haven't come into office yet, but so you haven't had time to sit down and talk with everybody that, well, we would like benches, or we would like, you know.
So they're emailing in.
Oh, okay, so what are some of the ideas that you're hearing?
I think people are impressed with the pedestrian improvements and want to see that continued maybe a little farther north or west, mm-hmm. whatever.
Toward Love Field. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be sitting down with Luke Crossland next week,
mm-hmm. From Illume. He's the developer.
Illume and the new, you know, the new Illume development. Obviously,
Illume
that's
too.
Been really successful. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed the stuff that's in there. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm just gathering people's preferences about mm-hmm. that. We want to make sure that nothing is easy about doing collaborative, consensus-driven leadership. There's mm-hmm. nothing easy about it except the concept, which is everybody gets a seat at the table, everybody's ideas get aired. Mm-hmm. Not everybody gets everything they want, but everyone has a chance to have input.
Patty and I get everything we want.
You got the Calatrava Bridge.
Uh-huh.
Just for you.
It is. And that was one of the things that I was going to talk about. When I went over that bridge today, I noticed that there's the wrong first name on it. It still says Margaret, and I know it's been changed to Angela Hunt Hill. The other thing that I was wondering was, I know and I guess this is a Scott Griggs question, because the hill that was named after Angela is in Scott's district, I think, but I wasn't sure. Do you know the answer to that?
I am not.
I didn't know
sure.
Angela had a hill.
Are you talking about Goat Hill?
No.
Because that's rude.
Because it does.
Yeah.
The name of the hill is the Angela Hunt Hill Bridge. I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure you're wrong.
I might be confused about that, but I do go over the Angela Hunt Hill Bridge.
David thinks that the Stars regularly beat the Mavericks too. So
okay,
you know.
Okay. I just got to know which show I'm on. We're fine.
No, it's the Mavericks who usually have the higher score.
Yeah, they do. That's true.
It's true.
Okay, well, so they're both agreeing with me, and then they're saying I'm wrong.
Well, here's a thought for some of these entertainment districts, and I'm thinking like Lois Greenville and Cedar Springs and Bishop Arts and all of these, and that's to have some sort of shuttle bus system that goes directly from a DART rail station to these districts on a regular basis, and we could absolutely crank business in these districts if people could leave their cars at home, go to a DART rail station, get on the DART rail, buy a day pass, and they could get from the DART rail safely.
Well, that's happening with Bishop Arts with the new trolley.
Right, right. But like into Cedar Springs, into Lowest Greenville, into Upper Greenville. I mean, I don't think
it'll be forever before you see that, Patty.
Really? Because I think that would be like big city thinking.
There's a real smart woman who lives over on Swiss Avenue named Joanna Hampton, who is trying to put together a neighborhood group to do an area plan for the, for lack of a better term, the Live Oak Gaston corridor.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is some cool, funky stuff.
And they want it to be cooler and funkier. Well, maybe less funky, but more compatible with their neighborhood. But as part of that, what she's looking at is connectivity. And how do we make sure that we can, like if you wake up in your house in Little Forest Hills and you get on your bike and you go right around the lake, well, could you connect to the Katy Trail and get down to Uptown? Could you connect down through the bottom of the Santa Fe Trail and get over to the Trinity Basin? Those are ideas that I think you'll see coming. And at the same time, we've got the circulator, the downtown circulator, hopefully starting this year.
That would be awesome. That would be really cool.
You have that thing downtown that's going to hit, for people who don't know what it is, if you remember the Hoppa bus, mm-hmm. It's a somewhat similar concept. The details aren't set in stone
yet. I forgot those little bunny buses.
But what we want is a friendly, inviting DART vehicle that is either low or no cost, something that is hop on, hop off.
Mm-hmm.
So that you stop at the Perot, you stop at McKinney Avenue Trolley, you stop at Clyde Warren Park, you can get around to the Main Street corridor downtown. That is a system that can be easily rolled out when there is a sufficient development up Ross, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Think about a rubber wheel trolley system that runs from downtown where you can get to just about anywhere, not in your car, on public transport, mm-hmm. going up Ross with a stop at the bottom end of Henderson and the bottom end of Lower Greenville.
That would be awesome.
To me, that's something that doesn't look like it would be all that expensive in the grand scheme of things,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Something that would really benefit people's daily quality of life. I love cars. I'm probably going to drive cars till I die, but as we get denser in our urban core, we have got to start looking at streets, our streets budget, as not just places where cars go.
Well, the McKinney Avenue trolley is being extended.
It is.
It did stop at the Art Museum, and I've seen the tracks on the other side of the Clyde Park. How far into downtown is that going to loop around? Is it just a couple of blocks more?
Currently, it's just a few blocks
just
more,
few blocks
but
more.
I strongly suspect that the MOD of the McKinney Avenue Trolley Authority is thinking of connecting the new developments in Farmers Market with.
So that would be great to have a line that goes all the way across downtown.
You know, but in Texans, you know, from the Old West, we all still have to have our horse. I mean, that's kind of the problem. Everybody wants to drive. But I think part of it, too, is that if I'm four blocks from where I want to be, we don't think to walk. You know, that we could take DART rail and drop off here and then walk 4 blocks. That's unheard of in Dallas. Well, in fact, there's a gay comedian in town, Paul Williams, who says, you know, when you see someone walking in Dallas, you don't think, oh, they're walking, they're getting somewhere on foot. You know, no, they're homeless. That's why they're walking. Because we are not a pedestrian city, really.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think that the circulator system stands a chance of changing. You know, going back to our principle of it's amazing that people can learn things. If you don't work or live downtown, you might not know how easy it is to walk around downtown. But if you're on some sort of vehicle that gets you conveniently to all mm-hmm. the good locations downtown, you might start to think, you know what? I actually really can walk from Renaissance Tower to the Arts District. That sounds crazy, but mm-hmm. I've actually done that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we... I think if people's mind frame changes about the use of their automobiles, then maybe we'll see some improvement in pedestrian capability on our streets and bikeability.
My favorite story is about just walking. My first house, there was a 7-Eleven on my corner. And on Sunday morning, I would walk, you know, this is like 20 years ago, I'd walk to the corner to pick up the paper. And several times people would stop, oh, do you need a ride? No, I'm just going to the 7-Eleven. You know, it's like, I'm just going to the 7-Eleven down the street. Oh, come on in, I'll give you a ride there. It's but okay, I can walk
you're
there.
You're from New York. I mean, New Yorkers walk.
Well, no, it literally was on the corner of my block.
You poor thing had to walk.
I think there's a Steve Martin movie on. Has a scene
something like that, something like that. Because, I actually can walk, and Annie is having conniption fits over there, so why don't we take a break so that we can call the ambulance, get her to the hospital. And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here with the late Patty Fink, and our guest today is the Honorable Philip Kingston. We'll be back with more with his honor.
In Dallas, local partners and national nonprofit Connect to Compete have made available for residents digital skills training classes. Classes include basic internet searching, internet basics, computer basics, and more. Local residents are also eligible for programs that provide assistance for internet service and computers. For more information on internet classes at local libraries, their phone number is 1-855-387-9166 or on the web at everyoneon.org. This program is in partnership with Dallas Area Libraries, Connect to Compete, and the Ad Council.
When they're gone for good. This is Scott from KNON's Texas Blues Radio telling you don't miss out on some great blues. KNON's Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. It's a CD put together by real blues fans for real blues fans like you. Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 features great local blues from Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, J.J. and the Detonators, the Chris Watson Band, the Two Tones, Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone with Charlie Love, Dave Millsap, Sirloin and the Ass Kicking Machine, Tutu Jones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, and Johnny Red and the Roosters. Get a copy now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records. This is a Dallas Blues collector's item. A very limited amount of vinyl copies can be found at Forever Young Records, the sponsor of this great blues project. CD downloads are available at cdbaby.com. Whether you get it as a download, on vinyl, or on CD, all the proceeds will benefit KNON. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit KNON.org.
This is Kimberly Truex of the GLBT Wedding Expo, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here with the late Patty Fink, and our guest is Philip Kingston, who was recently elected to serve District 14 on the Dallas City Council. Swearing in is Monday. First City Council meeting is Wednesday. Then you're on vacation. God, do you have it tough.
Daytime TV and bonbons, man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, lots of... Oh, Oprah's gone. Lots of Ellen.
Yeah, it must be tough. Must be tough. You're a practicing attorney. You're going to continue your practice?
Remains to be seen. The district's business will come first. The city's business will come first. Mm-hmm. So to the extent I can keep some practice going beyond that, I'll try to do so. Mm-hmm. But first priority is the city.
What type of law do you practice?
Traditionally, I've been a commercial litigator, but some of that work really requires a very flexible schedule, running down to the courthouse quite often. And that's not really compatible with the schedule of the city councilman. So I'm trying to do some more generalized practice. I advise small businesses typically as in my practice, and so doing a little bit more outside general counsel work for them. And then it's one of the great things about the Dallas legal community is just that if you have a client that you can't service properly, it's an easy thing to go find a colleague who can give them good service and sub in for you and pick up the slack. So that's probably what will happen.
Okay.
Well, it's quite possible that you would be on council for eight consecutive years.
Let's hope so.
You know, so that would be quite an impact in your practice, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sacrifice. And, you know, I don't whine about that because I wanted this job and I'm excited about this job, but there's no question it's a sacrifice.
The last four District 14 council people have been term limited out.
Mm-hmm.
They've served 8 years, 8 years, 8 years, and Lori Palmer, was it 8 years? Is that what term limits were at the time, though?
Because
she was
so.
Before current. But that district has a history of keeping its council person. So,
just for our listeners who may not be aware, each council member is up every 2 years for those 14 districts.
It's the second stupidest system we could have put in place, only beaten out by if we were up every year.
Right. And so every 2 years for a limit of four consecutive terms or 8 years. But we have folks like Steve Salazar, Sandy Grayson, who served and then went fallow for a season and then came back, and that's perfectly fine. You just can't do, you know, 10 consecutive years.
Al Lipscomb's another one.
Because we're trying to protect people's mental health.
Right. They have to roll off after 8 years. And then the mayor, of course,
paroled.
Is only paroled, just even better. And then the mayor is up every 4 years for a limit of two terms.
That's right.
Okay, so you're going to be on the council. Council's been, divisive lately. Angela was always the outlier on the council for the last 8 years. She picked up fellow outliers, Scott, who, I'll say it, you don't have to, they manipulated his district to try to get rid of him. Didn't work. He'll still be on the council. Your positions, and this is probably one of the reasons you won, you were real firm against fracking, real firm against the Trinity. You laid out your positions and stuck with them.
Let's be real clear. Against the Trinity Tollway. I'm as pro-Trinity as you can get.
Oh, that's right. I was confused. It's Patty who's anti-Trinity.
No, I use it as an example, though, when people talk about the fact that the city council races are nonpartisan and the city council activities are nonpartisan. Because I say, well, you know, all politics is local, and there are no Democrats and Republicans at City Hall, really. And you say, well, what is the Democratic Party's position on the Trinity River Project? They don't have one, because you know what? There's people on both sides of that issue inside the Democrat. They're inside the Republican Party. So there's when you get this local about, you know, which street's going to connect to what, there is no party position on it. It's about neighbors and about community.
Right.
That's it.
And as far as, I just want to, while I'm thinking of this, I want to give you an idea. Just plant this idea. I gave it to Scott also. He loved the idea. If you want to get the mayor on board with getting the Trinity bike trail built, put tolls on it. Mayor will be on board.
Where would you put the toll tag on your bike?
Right on your dashboard.
Maybe we should just have like toll tag tattoos on our foreheads.
Or on your helmet.
On your helmet?
Yeah, bike flag, maybe?
You can go on. It should be able to read any of those. That's the way you get that. You don't think the new council, though, we were just talking a little bit before the show, you don't think the new council is going to be business as usual, where somebody like Angela was not put on committees or important committees. The mayor did everything he could to disenfranchise
her.
Well,
and that was not Mike Rawlings. You know, that was Tom Leppert who did that. Mike Rawlings has been very inclusive. you know, we'll talk a little bit more about him in a minute, but you can agree or disagree with his positions, but I think he's done a nice job of trying to build a cohesive council that is not that divisive. Obviously, you're going to disagree on things from time to time, but I don't think that that's a broken system or a bad group of people or anything like that.
I'm not calling them bad people. I'm just...
Well, I think when you look back,
some of them
though,
I am.
I mean, the heyday of Angela really bucking the mayor was under Tom Leppert.
Oh, sure, sure.
And
sure.
If anyone's been bucking Rawlings on the council, it's been completely overshadowed in our community because we're bucking my Rawlings.
Well,
and that kind of like takes everybody's attention. You can't get.
But where Angela was saying on the last show, more than on the council, it was city staff that would, well, that Trinity. Trail project, we're just not working on it right now. So if she was kind of the outlier on the council, her projects became less important.
That did happen.
But you think it's not going to be business as usual. You think there are new coalitions that are going to be formed that are really going to get some progressive ideas
through. I'm excited. I'm really excited. You know, Scott Griggs and Adam Adrano are friends of mine, just on a personal level, but also I think we've got some real common interests in policy. Sandy Grayson has been terrific. She is an absolute independent, and you get nothing but the straight dope from her every time. Mm-hmm. But I also think that you cannot predict how Lee Kleinman's going to vote or how Rick Callahan's going to vote. Those are I don't know. I've talked to them, but they're independent people. They have a history of independent leadership, and I think we should give them credit for that and wait and see what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. I also think I've worked with all the other members of council that are remaining on council when I've been down there on neighborhood issues and have had really good relationships with them. Mm-hmm. I think you can't cast them into some stereotype that you built in your head and say this is how they're going to vote on this issue. There are chances to collaborate on lots of issues. It's a legislative body. Everybody, you know, there's some people I think who want to be ideologues or whatever else, or super tied to a dogma or something like that. That doesn't work in city government. It is a pragmatic exercise. And
then there are gay issues in Von Seal.
Well, you know,
she's not coming around on our issues.
Right, and she's kind of the Mitchell Rozanski of on that issue. Because I remember when Mitch Rozanski was representing District 13, and he was like Dr. No, you know, no, on lots of things. And he was kind of predictable in that way, in a lot of things that strayed from, you know, what he considered core business interests kind of thing. But I don't think there's anybody other than perhaps Von Seal on LGBT issues that's that lightning rod, you know, on stuff.
Well, Mitchell's core principle is that he hated taxes, and that's how you could always predict when he was going to put his foot down.
It involved money. It was, but kind of knew how
I think,
he was going to go.
Yeah, I think hating taxes is probably at least an ethically defensible position.
I like taxes. I really like them. Speaking of, this week we have a Supreme Court decision coming down. We have two coming down, and actually four. Two of them are
LGBT related.
Actually, and there was one this week that was HIV related too.
Right. But there are 11 cases still remaining.
Oh, there are 11. I thought there were four.
No, there are 11 cases remaining, and the calendar for the court has only shows that Monday, when you'll be in your inauguration celebration.
Watching my phone, though, for the Supreme Court decisions.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And they'll come in the morning, so hopefully that'll be a good thing. You know, that they're not going to do 11 cases in one day.
No.
That they probably will not.
They just haven't decided if it's going to be Thursday or
right.
Wednesday
so,
or Thursday.
Well, they haven't decided anything. The only one still calendared is Monday, but the Chief Justice can then decide other decision days or announce them, and it could be the 26th or 27th, typically.
So let's put your attorney hat on right here and just get your take on what could happen. Your tattered attorney hat. There are two cases. One is the Prop 8 case. What do you know about that case? You've been following it?
Yeah, a little bit. I am I've been distracted with a few other things. But
have you been busy?
I've been a little busy.
Oh, okay.
But there are I think at least six different potential outcomes on that case. Mm-hmm. You know, ranging everywhere from same-sex marriage legal throughout the United States by federal law, which I think is probably unlikely, all the way down to they could kick the case for lack of standing, meaning they would decline to exercise jurisdiction because they found a standing problem, which would
in that case, that is a win because the lower court ruling would then stand and California would have same-sex marriage.
That's right. And there's a huge range of possibilities, and I honestly don't know how to handicap the likelihood of any one of them. The one thing I would say that people always, as a lawyer, it irritates me when I see journalism about the court that focuses on some belief about the justices' internal partisan or political beliefs. And if you read the court's decisions carefully with a legal background, none of this stuff is made up out of whole cloth and then defended with the trappings of legal thought. These opinions are the result of legal thinking and not of political thinking.
You know, it's interesting. It always surprises me. Whenever the court comes down 8-1 and the one is Alito, I'm always on Alito's side.
Really?
Which is surprising. I'll give you an example.
He was in town this week.
Was he really?
Yeah, he threw out the pitch at the Texas Rangers game.
Huh. I'll give you an example of one. The Westboro Baptist Church decision. And that was that 8 of them decided, no, it was a freedom of speech thing. And Alito came down on the side of, there is such a thing as yelling fire in a theater, in a crowded theater. And for the hour during somebody's funeral, it's such an emotional thing that it is okay to say, you can protest. You can protest over there. You can protest before or after. You just can't do it during this really emotional time. And as a society, it's our responsibility to protect our neighbors who are grieving during their grief. And you don't have that constitution. And I agree with him on that. I just agree with him on it's not hurting your free speech to say it over there.
Right.
In that case, for that 1 hour.
That's and, David, I would say to you that you could then take Alito's argument and turn it around to say, oh, you want to protest the president when he comes to your town? Mm-hmm. You can do it right over here. We haven't hurt your free speech one bit.
And that's what Bush did. There were the free speech zones. I'm against those. His decision was saying very specifically during a funeral when a family is grieving. And I agree with that.
And you couldn't do
but
it during
this goes
the
back to my point. I don't think anybody's internal political feelings are driving the majority of these decisions. I'm certain I could be shouted
this is
down
not
on
political.
A couple of things.
You know,
Bush
mm-hmm.
v. Gore or whatever. But yeah. There's real legal reasoning that goes into this stuff, and I think it's wrong to say that mm-hmm. these guys have these decisions made up and then justify them with mumbo jumbo.
Well, I think too that you know a lot of people are speculating. Oh, well, they're holding these decisions to make some sort of, you know, like PR ploy, and they're like, no, they typically release them when they're ready to be released, as soon as they're ready to be released, mm-hmm. and which is piling up here at the end of the session because that's the way they operate. They have all of these cases to consider, and they have a lot of writing to take care of. You know, with the opinions and the concurrences and dissents, and they're working to the last minute to get these things out. So it's not something they've been sitting on. Oh, let's do it. Let's get our PR genius here and figure out what's the best day to do this.
I think you might be right about that.
We have some questions.
Questions.
I'm not sure I got them exactly right. Who took these, Doc or okay? Annie took them. Okay, on the Trinity Corridor project. Just a general question.
Yes.
Okay, talk about the Trinity Corridor Project for a minute.
Right. Well, it wasn't just totally just general. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yes.
It was about that soccer coach there mm-hmm. and the eminent domain taking away the soccer fields and putting in the horse park and the golf course instead. And they've gone around the neighborhood and asked, and everyone wants to keep the soccer field, so that the neighbors want to know where you stand on that issue.
I don't think that's an appropriate use of eminent domain. eminent domain needs to be for a very clear public purpose, and I don't...
Golf.
Golf and horse park. Okay, I can understand the argument for the public purpose there. I just don't think it's strong enough, especially mm-hmm. When you're taking away somebody's property, that's a pretty serious exercise of governmental power, and it makes me nervous and uncomfortable.
To me, it's a commercial enterprise, even if it's for a nonprofit such as a city golf course or something. But it's no different to me than like taking somebody's home to put in a mall or a set of apartments or whatever else they want to do. Unless it's like an easement.
Is there going to be a Neiman's in that mall?
Pardon me?
Is there going to be a Neiman's in that mall?
Well, that could be.
Depends on how good the shopping is.
You know, and some you know, shoes for sure. You know, got to have some shoes. But... You know, it's just a poor choice. Unless the biggest thing I can think of that would be appropriate would be some sort of easement situation where we really can't accomplish this major thing unless we have this strip of land, mm-hmm. and you know, whether that be a road or a you know, lines for electricity or
gas pipeline
or lines or whatever, you know,
gas lines so that we can frack.
I'll reserve
David's
comment on that.
David's still fracking Clyde Warren Park.
I'm all for fracking in Clyde Warren Park. If you're going to frack in a park, do it in the most popular park in the city, and we'll see how much people care for it. Let's get back to the Supreme Court. The other decision is the Edie Windsor case. The Edie Windsor case is a tax case. I'll keep it brief because Patty hates when I talk taxes on it.
I've been on the air with him for 14 years now, and always...
I've been predicting that it's going to be a tax case that's going to do it.
And he talks about taxes in New York, taxes. I'm like, boring. Let's do some other example.
That's the one that comes in. So boring,
and yet also... Such a point of controversy.
Well, this is the perfect case, though. This really is the perfect case because Republicans hate the inheritance tax. Conservatives just hate that tax. Here's a case where if you're straight married, you don't pay the tax. If you're gay married, you do pay the tax.
And for Edie, it was $363,000.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Not a small sum.
Right. An 82-year-old...
Gorgeous at 82.
Yeah, and real vibrant. I hope I'm that way in 50 years when I reach that age.
You'll be that pretty.
Why is he laughing? Oh, they're telling me break. We're going to talk about what you think the outcomes of this one could be right after.
On the other side of the break, taxes.
GoodSearch.com provides a way for you to support nonprofits like KNON with your online shopping and dining. GoodSearch.com offers a downloadable toolbar for searching from your computer called Good App, so your purchases can go to support KNON. With Good Dining, every time you go out to eat at participating restaurants, then a portion of what you spend gets donated to KNON. Registering is easy at GoodSearch.com, and KNON 89.3 is the name to enter in your account settings for charity selection. Support KNON with your online shopping and dining at GoodSearch.com.
It's a KNON crawfish party. This is Jim Rowe of Monday's Cajun Zydeco Music Party Show, inviting you to come out and join us for some great music and great crawfish this Sunday at Poor David's Pub. I will be your host, and we'll have the best in Zydeco music from JB and the Zydeco Posse. We'll have mangoes boiling up some massive bugs. These are live jumbo, perch, fresh crawfish coming at you spicy or radioactive with corn and potatoes. Advance tickets are only $5 at KNON.org, and crawfish is only $6 per pound, all proceeds benefiting KNON.
This is JB, and yeah, you're right. It's Sunday, June the 23rd at Port Davis Pub, located at 1313 South Lamar in Dallas. Doors are open at 5, and Jim Bro will be in the mix with Cajun and Zydeco music until me and the Zydeco Posse hit the stage.
So come on down to the KNON Crawfish Boil this Sunday with JB and the Zydeco Posse and live crawfish from Mangoes at Poor David's Pub. This is a KNON benefit event. See you, Shaq.
This is William, your videographer for the KNON Talk Shows. You can watch Lambda Weekly by going to the KNON.org website. Click on Schedules to the left side of your screen. Choose Lambda Weekly's page. Scroll to the bottom of that page. Then choose your favorite show to watch or download. This show will be ready for viewing by lunchtime Tuesday. Have a great day.
This is Jason Wright from Dallas, and I listen to Lambda Week 89.3 KDOW.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and our guest is the Honorable Philip Kingston. Are you getting used to your title?
I'm 48 hours away from being honorable.
Oh, I'm the almost honorable.
It's pre-honorable.
For the next 2 days.
Pre-honorable. Pre-honorable Philip Kingston. We were just talking a little bit about the upcoming marriage equality or DOMA case that's coming
up. But there are 11 cases that have yet to be decided, so we fully anticipate some additional, at least one additional decision date to be announced next week, possibly Wednesday or Thursday.
But there are really four big cases,
and the two of them being the same-sex marriage cases, for the Prop 8 and DOMA cases, and then the Voting Rights Act is up, and then an affirmative action case is up, and those are four very high-profile cases that will get a lot of media. So we'll see how they deal those cards and when.
Shakes out.
Right.
So what do you think the possible, what are the possible outcomes for the Edie Windsor case, the tax case?
That one I don't know as well. I just haven't followed that one. I've read probably more in The Voice about it than I've read anywhere else.
Okay. Well, the general consensus is that it'll be ruled, Section 3 of DOMA will be ruled unconstitutional.
Which is that the federal government doesn't have to, or shouldn't,
well, doesn't have the authority to say that you can't have federal benefits,
equality.
Equality
and benefits, right. Okay.
Because what they're saying is the inequity between, you know, opposite-sex married and gay married in taxes is clearly unconstitutional. And that's a general consensus, not just among LGBT observers and court observers, but mainstream and hot, diehard court observers. And a good place to follow all of this is scotusblog.com,
right.
scotusblog.org. They'll announce every morning. They have a live blog that they do announcements from the court. So you can log in right there and follow right along as it's happening.
Yeah, I also like the Volokh Conspiracy.
What's it?
Volokh Conspiracy. It's a law professor's blog.
Huh.
I think SCOTUS blog is probably the gold standard. But yeah, Volokh Conspiracy is worth checking out.
Hmm.
Cool.
Okay.
Lots of resources to look to get the news.
While we're on the air, there are two things going on. This protest down in South Dallas against Von Ciel. What she did earlier this week was she was horrified that in South Dallas there was a billboard showing two African-American men. The tagline on the billboard is update your status, meaning check to see whether you're HIV positive. Reason that billboard was placed where it was this week is National HIV Testing Day on Friday. Dallas County, 49% of all new cases of HIV are among African-Americans. So the message on that particular billboard is to the African-American community, just check your status and then get health care if you need it, if you find that you're positive, without judgment. She was a little bit judgmental. There's a protest against her down at Abounding Prosperity on MLK Boulevard.
And those were two of the most handsome models that they could have used for that ad. I mean, I guess that's the idea.
That's the idea. Yeah. Several of the models do actually come from Dallas. Those two don't. But there have been several that have been regularly participating in all kinds of AIDS events and promoting. And one, it's also African-American. It's a father and son. And real sweet story between them because the son was afraid to tell the father, and the father's reaction was, he's my son. I want him to be healthy. You know, and nice story there. The other event going on, rededication in Lee Park of the Alan Ross AIDS Memorial.
And, David, you actually wrote about this week in The Voice. And as I was reading it, I was interested in it because I thought I might go by there. But also, I was thinking, you know, I've been meaning to read up on Alan Ross. I'll go pull his Wikipedia page after I read this. But no, David had done that for me and gave me the entire history of Alan Ross and the memorial, which is great.
That's exciting stuff.
It was an interesting story. Just writing about an event going on, that's, you know, a few paragraphs. But I really wanted to flesh this out because most people, it was the forgotten memorial. Alan and the Tavern Guild wanted to do an AIDS memorial back in the 80s, and the park department blocked them at every step. So what they got permission to do first was just plant daffodils, and they planted 1,800 daffodils, which represented the number of people who had died up until that point in Dallas County. Then they wanted to place a plaque, you know, 1 foot by 9 inches, you know, big deal plaque. They blocked them, and the Dallas Southern Memorial Association, is what it's called, and the Turtle Creek Association went to city council, and, oh, this park won't be family friendly anymore.
Because of this 9 by 12
abomination. And
the Southern Memorial Association actually argued that it wasn't a park at all.
Right.
It was a Robert E. Lee Memorial.
That this they went to city council and said this is not a neighborhood park. Now, I have to say, this organization, to join now, you just pay your dues. They welcome everybody. In 1995, they joined with the Dallas Tavern Guild to form the Lee Park Association. I mean, it was like two opposites. Before that, they were this white racist organization. And
that's
I would just say it.
Those are the folks who say it was the War of Northern Aggression.
Still do say that a little bit. I was their guest at lunch yesterday, and they're lovely people, and they help out Lee Park to a great degree.
Well, they're part of the Lee Park association that runs the park. Yeah. Yeah, they are a wonderful group now. In the early 90s,
back
when they were blocking,
people can learn things.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
People can learn things.
Well, in the early 90s, in order to join this group, you had to prove your Southern ancestry went back to the Civil War.
Really?
Yes, to the War of Northern Aggression. And it wasn't assured that you were going to be accepted. They've changed. I mean, that's not what they are anymore, and I want to make that clear. That is not what the Turtle Creek Association welcomes the gay community, has lots of board members on their board who are gay. At the time, anyway, the park department said you can place a plaque, you just can't use the words gay, lesbian, or AIDS.
This sounds like when we did the National Coming Out Day thing at Marine Corps Square at Fair Park, and they said, well, you can't say that, because this is back when Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Mm-hmm. So we had to say, inside the Perry Gate, across from the DAR house. It's like all this convoluted description on our posters about where we would be. Right. Like, follow the breadcrumbs, because we can't say those words.
You can't say the words gay. Anyway, they're rededicating right now.
Are they going to use the word gay?
Well, they used the old plaque that Alan actually had made up. And what it's the word AIDS, there was a compromise. It took 3 years, but there was a compromise. The word AIDS is there. Instead of gay and lesbian, it says Dallas Tavern Guild. So what that said was the park department preferred bars over gays and lesbians.
It might still be the case. Not sure.
I'm not sure. But it's a little bit ironic. Let's talk a little bit about Scott's resolution.
Okay.
Because I know you're all for it, along in taking over Angela's for it, so that's not a net gain there. That's just hold the place.
I'm only maintenance.
You're maintenance in this one. But you're going to be more than maintenance, because you'll be working with him. The resolution, depending upon how the Supreme Court cases come out this week, might have to be rewritten.
I think you're right.
And do you want to talk about what the resolution was?
Well, the resolution has there was some discussion at the beginning about whether it would be one or two resolutions. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them being a statement that the city of Dallas supports marriage equality, and the other part being that the city of Dallas supports employment non-discrimination for sexual identity.
Sexual orientation and gender identity.
Actually, it's very broad. Yeah. And Dallas actually does have that policy and has been good about promoting those rights.
Not only as a non-discrimination ordinance for citizens, but also as an internal city employment policy.
That's right.
That has those both protections.
And has implications for city contracting as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dallas is an open and accepting and a place that I think actually markets itself to LGBT companies and individuals.
So this should have been non-controversial from the beginning, because all the resolution would have been doing was encouraging the legislature pass this statewide so that our city ordinance will have more teeth.
That's true, and really just a statement of our principles. It also may have had an effect on our national score on the HRC Index. What's that thing
called? The Municipal Equality Index, the MEI.
Yeah. And it may have been a valuable tool for that, because one of the ways we got dinged in comparison to Fort Worth is that they have a specific category for how often do public officials speak out on LGBT issues. And my argument has been that Fort Worth speaks out more because they need to, because they're 10 years behind us, but that's not how the MEI works. Mm-hmm. So
actually, they had their non-discrimination ordinance ahead of us.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And and actually, it was a straight man who pushed it in Fort Worth. It's a very interesting story. But they were ahead of us, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but then they had the setback, you know, with the rainbow.
Not their best day.
That little period of unpleasantness over in Fort Worth.
but you know, we have a long way to go, too. I mean, there are a lot of things that we can still yet do to make it real for people in the city of Dallas.
So the resolution procedurally, I don't really want to try to go through and explain why it's not on the city council agenda now, because that would take the rest of the show.
Right.
But what I can say is that with the new council coming on board, I am going to work very hard toward getting the 5 signatures we need to put it back on the agenda. And then I'm very confident that once it's on the agenda, that there will be the votes for it.
Oh, people will vote for it. I mean, they told us, I don't want to sign it, but once it's the mayor said he would vote for it. He's the one who kept it off the agenda, but if it was there, I'd vote for it.
I know. It's ironic.
Quite get there, but...
You know, somebody I know saw him at the airport yesterday, and I said, did you ask him if he was absent or present? You know? Because that was the whole crux of it.
I want to know which flight from Brazil lands at 10 in the morning at DFW.
I don't think it does. I want to go back to... You were just elected... last week. The inauguration is Monday, and by the way, anybody who wants to go, it's at the Meyerson. It's free of charge. Just doors open.
Starts at 10 a.m.
Doors open at 9.
Now, this is where you take your oath, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. We take like a ceremonial oath. I've actually already been sworn by the city secretary, which
you
have to do before you go to the inauguration.
So you're honorable.
It's kind of like civil marriage and
really
religious.
I don't think that makes me honorable. I think I'm really on the borderline.
Well, it's kind of like the difference.
On the honorable fence.
The difference between civil marriage and religious marriage. He's had his civil, now this is the religious ceremony.
Yeah, it's like we're in France.
This is the one where you invite all your friends and family.
Right. Well, and one of the things I always say is you ought to wait and see what people do to decide if they're honorable.
Right.
You guys can evaluate whether I'm honorable later.
Oh, and we will. one of the things that you stood out among 7 candidates. Yours was a tough race. 7 candidates.
I was the prettiest.
Okay.
That's it. You get the sash.
That was it. Seriously, I went to a number of the candidate debates, and your district had more candidate debates, I think, than just about any other district that we were watching.
We were certainly trying to.
It seemed like it. I mean, sometimes it was, okay, who's driving with who, because one to the next to the next. How do you think you made yourself stand out to your district?
I answered questions. I don't want to be too critical of the people who ran against me, but when I get asked a question, I try to give a direct answer, even if it's I don't know, because I don't know everything. But that, I think, really resonated. And the thing is, I've been working hard in my district for well over a decade. I do know these issues. I do know the players. I have opinions and a record on these issues. And, you know, we were the only campaign, I think, that really set out an agenda, a bunch of issues that we took a stand on. And two of the ones that you and I talked about before the show that we knew were going to resonate in District 14 were gas drilling and the Trinity Tollway. And, you know, I gave clear answers on those. They're answers that are, I think, very easy to understand. And I think that they're answers that are harmonious with the, you know, thoughts and wishes of District 14's voters. I have a new poll from last Saturday that seems to back me up on that.
You do.
You do. You do, absolutely.
And let's be clear about where do you stand on the Trinity Tollway?
I oppose the Trinity Tollway alignment within the levees because it doesn't serve the transportation purpose that it was advertised to serve. There's no money for it, and I think it's dangerous.
It's inside levees.
And really, let's think about it. Who wants a high-speed roadway in a park? that is a suboptimal solution, no matter what the issues are otherwise. Mm-hmm. So let's start with making it a park, and let's figure out a different transportation solution. For instance, the Pegasus Project seems to have a much greater impact than this ever would.
Which is what?
That is a group of projects that will, for one thing, involve reconstructing what they call the horseshoe, the bend in 30 and 35 on mm-hmm. the southwestern corner of downtown.
Mm-hmm. As well as rebuilding I-35 so that it's realigned and you're not changing lanes and back and forth in order to...
The I-30 bridge over the Trinity, that stuff, once that's straightened out, should have a greater impact on traffic flow than the proposed Trinity Tollway would.
As I was coming in the building today, one of the things I thought to myself was the little whoosh that went by with the DART rail going by just outside the building here. I thought, that's the sound we need to hear in Dallas, not cars and honking. And mm-hmm.
It sounds like the doors on Star Trek, doesn't it?
It mm-hmm. does. It just sounds so cool. I'm like, wow, it feels so big city. You know, like we're a real city.
We have the largest light rail system in the country now. I mean, people don't realize that.
And it's large.
Well, and
it's
DART is refocusing on...
Depends on
serving the central city, and I think that that's valuable. I think that's what needed to happen, and we have some really forward-thinking transportation planners in this town, both inside and outside DART, that are really trying to work hard on making DART work better.
And I think when we can go to both airports, that'll be something. That'll be a big leap.
That's a challenge, but we're working on it.
You know, that's one mistake they made on the Green Line. It should have gone into Love Field. Through it, under it, above it, something should have gone.
It's like four blocks away, and people don't want four blocks.
Right. But there is a bus that goes. We're just about out of time. Fracking?
I'm against drilling, fracking, or refining within the city limits of Dallas. The short explanation is that when you... It's a public health issue. Our air is not great here, and in the future, individuals that we want to attract to Dallas are going to be the kind of people who have a choice about what kind of air they breathe, and they'll avoid us. We are also endangering our federal funding by being an EPA non-attainment city, and the damage that could be done from that far outweighs any paltry royalties we would get from natural
gas. And what about water?
The water situation, there's a brand new study out this week showing that Texas groundwater is being depleted rapidly, especially in East Texas. Water is, fresh water that's used for fracking is then non-recyclable. It doesn't come back into the water system. And
it takes an enormous amount of water.
It takes a lot of water, and we've had great strides in our conservation in Dallas. We've stretched our water resources, and that's what we need to focus on.
And we're running over. I want to thank you, Philip, for being with us. For all of us here at Lambda Weekly, we'll be back next week.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Philip.